Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 222. Appreciate all you guys that listen each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me spread the message, and ultimately I just want to give back to the coaching community, and that's the motivation for this, and doing that helps me do so. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with brands and people that I believe in, and that company does a fantastic job of giving back to the coaching community and building solid equipment. This week, I'm joined by Dr. Andy Galpin. Dr. Galpin's a professor at Cal State Fullerton. He's a co-author of Unplugged. We'll talk a lot about. He's co-host of a couple of podcasts. He's pretty much done it all, and just appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Hey man, it's a pleasure to be here. I've been following your stuff for a very long time, so I was pretty stoked when you reached out. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe he wants me to come on. This is great.
So, seriously,
it's a pleasure, man.
No, it's awesome, man. I appreciate that, brother. Well, hey, I want to take you back now. We're both college safeties. We both played ball, small college football. From there, you went off to be a strength and conditioning coach and coach pro athletes at almost every level. Worked with special forces guys. I've worked with Army Special Forces. Mm. Got in on the academic side, getting your PhD from Memphis and some other play, you know, and just working at Cal State Fullerton and things like that. You've done a lot of different things. You know, which one of those stops really kind of best defines you? Where did you grow up the most? Where did you learn, you know, what you needed to know to kind of go make the impact that you're making in the community right now?
Yeah, you know, like first and foremost, I identify with all those things, whether it's scientist, you know, teacher, coach, athlete, for the most part as being a strength coach, which is actually sort of funny because it's what I honestly do the least of.
All right, sure.
Like, I'm not going to lie, I don't coach anybody. I'm not in the weight room at all right now with anyone. It's been a long time. So, but that's still, like, that's what I identify with, even though I don't do it a tremendous amount anymore. And that's because that's where my genuine love is. And I don't really see that much of a difference between being a strength coach and a teacher.
Great.
What I do differently is instead of having the athletes on the floor all the time, now I'm taking my kids in my classroom and I still take them out to the floor. But the way that I teach my, you know, academic classes, like, I, you know, you would think that you're being taught academic classes to be a strength coach.
That's awesome.
And that's really what I do. All my social media stuff, my website stuff, I put it out there for the betterment of coaches and practitioners. And the reason actually I went and got my PhD was because, you know, I was, like we talked about, we were both small school college football,
right?
We were athletes. And then I did some Olympic weightlifting and was pretty good at that, qualified for some big meets, but I was never the guy that just walked on and was an All-American.
Right.
So I had extreme incentive to be like, I got to figure this stuff out. Because if I do anything wrong, I'm probably not playing, right? And I'm not going to qualify for the tournament. And so I continued my master's and got my PhD because I was so enamored with understanding what is the physiology behind all these different training modalities and why is this one working better and why is this athlete responding and why does this athlete need a different thing? And so the reason I was actually very, very lucky when I graduated with my PhD, you know, I basically had a pick of a number of jobs, and that's not because I'm extremely talented, but that's because I had carved out a very specific niche,
right?
Which was, I understood biochemistry and muscle physiology and metabolism, but I took it from the perspective of the strength coach, and I wanted to bring that stuff back and always be able to be like that. So when this job came up, you know, to basically run the strength conditioning program, the academic side of it, they're like, oh, you do that and muscle biopsies? Like, no one does that. So, I mean, that's really, like, even all the sciencey stuff aside, that's what it comes down to for me, man. Like, I could talk squat shop or, like, lifting. Like, this is what I do all day, so.
Well, that's, I mean, and I've on the show, I've had several different PhD strength coaches that have gone on to get their PhDs or academics that have been purely academics. And I often get on a soapbox about how, as practitioners, we have to start to embrace science more and start asking more questions, rather than just doing what we've learned or recycling, you know, other people's programs. And that's how we're going to ultimately, I mean, our profession is still relatively young. It's 60, 70 years old. You know, that's how we're going to advance it. And a lot of times I say it's not a profession because we don't really have coaches retiring being coaches. We have they often get pushed out of the profession or whatever. And so how we get to that point is we make it better, you know, and we have actual academic programs in strength and conditioning. But I think two things that you said there that I really want to highlight. To me, I agree with you 100%. If you're a great strength coach, you're a great teacher, bottom line. And and I think and then being a practitioner and asking questions. I mean, that's a lot of things, you know, you probably had questions, and because you weren't getting the answers, you went back to school, you know. And
that's literally, I mean, I can tell you specifically the exact question that just kept driving me nuts. Which, like, I remember being in probably high school and figuring out, oh, okay, it's something like 15 by 3 is quite different than 3 by 15.
Agreed.
Right. And I knew that from a performance side, and that from training myself, and then when I started coaching athletes, I knew that. Every book I had read, like, this is everywhere. But I could never get an answer of, like, well, how does the muscle know it did 45 reps either way? How in the heck does it know to grow in one way? Or like, and people would say, oh, it's neurological. And I'm like, that's not true. Like, there's no way that's the answer. And so I just kept going on. And another question started coming up. Hyperplasia. Like, that doesn't make sense. I don't believe it, but that doesn't happen. Like, all these things started going on. And as I started learning more of the physiology, I started realizing, like, this stuff is actually completely a guesswork. Like, no one's actually doing science in this area at all.
Agreed.
And I remember learning the things about the, you know, the, okay, here's your volume, your reps, your rest intervals for hypertrophy, blah, blah, blah. And I remember going, oh, really? Okay. And then I would say, oh, this is scientifically proven. This is what it is. And I'd look back and I'm like, I can't find these papers. I don't think these studies have ever actually been done. So I just want to be like, I want to do all the research and figure out, like, is this true, number one? And if it is, like, what is actually explaining it? So, like, that was always my motivation.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is why I love doing what I do, because I still am basically a strength coach, but I just run a chemistry lab.
There you go. That's awesome, man. I identify with that in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make all those stops, you don't do all those things without making some mistakes. What's maybe the biggest mistake you made and how you learned from it?
Well, I don't think I told you this part of the story, and I don't know if I've ever really publicly said this before.
Awesome. It's an exclusive.
Yeah, because I don't think I've ever been asked that question. But I actually got thrown out of college.
Did you really?
Yeah. So,
undergrad or grad?
Undergrad.
Okay.
So I only played, I think, two games in my senior year, and then got thrown off the team and thrown out of college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
PhD the reason is, that's a great story. I gotta hear it now. What happened?
I mean, the reason why you don't see any, like, all conference or any of that stuff on my name or the second national championships because I got thrown out.
Unbelievable.
Which is sort of funny because what happened was my two roommates that I was living with had played football for 1 year, then they had quit the team, but I still lived with them, and so we decided to throw a party. And I didn't really drink a lot in college. I go to parties and stuff, but I was always the person who's like, nah, I'm not ready. I don't want to drink. I'm like, I want to get back. And, you know, because those little things mattered for me.
Right.
Like, I had to train the next day or I wasn't going to stay in the starting line.
You weren't nearly as efficient as some of the other guys. I was the same way.
Right. So, anyways, they had a party. And we had maybe tried to throw some parties before, but no one ever showed up. I was not a popular guy at all in college. I didn't get along with the vast majority of the people in the school. I didn't like hardly any of my teammates. Because I was like a show-up work kind of guy, and the vast majority were very flamboyant. Like, got to make sure my bands match my gloves, and, like, I could not care less about that stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
But so I was like, whatever, you guys want to throw a party? Like, I don't care. Like, no one's going to show up. Like, well, they throw a party, and of course, like, you know where this story goes. Like, massive, right? And, if you've ever been at a college party, it's like, who cares?
Right.
They show up, break it up, and, you know, maybe the cops show up. But for whatever reason, for the first time and only time in my life I've ever heard of this, like 30 cops show up, they arrest everyone, give like 25 MIPs out, do all this stuff, and we were like, great. And I woke up Sunday morning, we're on ESPN, we are everywhere. And I'm like, we had a college party. Like, what in the world? And they had this big thing, I think it was ESPN or somebody had a big thing about how we had this underground ring going to supply undergrads with alcohol or minors with alcohol or whatever. And I was like, do you think I paid and bought anyone else's beer? Like, do you know what it's like? Like, I'm poor as shit. Like, no way that I pay for somebody else's beer. Like, are you? Anyway. So, like, obviously, you knew the hammer was going to come down that one.
Yeah.
And so they basically were like, I was already basically graduated. I had one credit that I was taking, which was football. And I'd actually already been accepted into grad school, too, so I didn't really care. And so they basically were like, well, here's the deal. Like, you're gone, you're done, but we'll let you get your credit so you can get your degree and all this stuff. But the lesson I learned there was a couple of fold. Number one, outside of like two or three of my teammates, all of them just straight up were like, oh, it's his idea. He told us blah, blah, blah. And just not only didn't they support me, but they threw me under the bus as hard as they possibly could so that they could stay on the team. And it was funny because I remember like I had an out. I could have probably gotten away with some of it, but I remember saying to the coach and the president and everything, like, you know what? Yep, this is me. And there's no reason to throw them back under the bus.
Right.
And there's no reason to harm them because these were still my teammates, and I knew if I did that, the season was over for the whole squad.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm going either way. There's no benefit of me reciprocating. But you better believe over the years since then, have I returned their phone calls now?
No.
Like, have I gone back to them now that half of them are coaches?
Right.
No chance. Like, I know that the ethics of them. But then I also learned, like, the bigger lesson was, you know, just accepting the responsibility there of being like, you know, technically it wasn't my party and I could have blamed my roommates and stuff, but I didn't do anything to stop it. I actively told people as well. So, like, that is my fault. That is 100% my fault. And I deserved every ounce of that punishment. And frankly, I got lucky that I got to still have my college degree.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's I mean, there's so many times in your coaching career that you're faced with kind of moral dilemmas.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling the truth is never the easiest thing. You know, it's so easy, especially in this day and age, just to kind of make up a story or throw somebody on the bus or do whatever. But that's also why I think you've had such success because, I mean, not karma, but, you know, when you do things right, it pays off in the long run. And obviously, you're doing that. I want to jump into the book, you know, Unplugged. This is, I told you when we first, you know, corresponded about it that I thought it was such a timely and a needed book, you know, at this time just because of the tech, you know, arms race that we kind of have going on. And really, in my opinion, what I've always said is that there's just so much tech out there, but nobody really truly knows how to use it and interpret the data. That it's so pointless, you know, and I often tell the story about, you know, when I first got interviewed for, you know, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the strength coaches, he asked me if I want to be a strength coach. And I said, yes, sir, more than anything. He said, okay, well, define strength. And that fundamental question of defining strength, I couldn't answer, you know, as a young 21-year-old strength coach. And that just taught me the lesson of making sure that I defined every single thing that went in my program. And so if I didn't fully understand tech, it didn't go in.
Yeah,
but you've been working on this. We talked off camera about how this has been a labor of life. I mean, this has been something that you've been working on and Brian and Phil, you know, for quite some time. But really, what was the story behind it? I mean, at what point did you guys decide that this was needed? Was it, you know, you're sitting around drinking some beers and surfing, or were you or were you just like, we're going to be pretty intentional about this and produce something
that's a great resource? No, it wasn't intentional at all, man. It was much more the former. Where, you know, Brian is, if you guys aren't familiar with Brian McKenzie, he was very disruptive in the endurance running world. And he was the first guy that I was aware of who came out and was like, no, we're not just going to run 6 miles this week and 7 miles next week and 8 miles. Like, and he completely challenged that paradigm, which is where I fell in love with him. Because I'm like, dude, he's a movement guy, I guess. But like, he really just understood integrating strength and intervals and power and all these things. And most importantly, movement skill. And so he really harps on like skill first, and we add volume as the last component of your program. So like, for example, you know, the very classic periodization approach, which is like, you know, start off with GPP, you're building your aerobic base and you move to hypertrophy strength, et cetera, et cetera. Well, he challenged that extensively and said, no, skill is first, movement skill. And then eventually we add eccentric, and then we add concentric, and we add speed, and then we add fatigue at the end, but only once you can show me that you can handle skill under speed and under power and stuff like that. And so from an endurance runner perspective specifically, I was like, dude, this is really, really innovative. And his last book was called Unbreakable Runner, and it was a New York Times bestseller. It was phenomenal. And so he and I kind of connected on a bunch of different levels, and he was talking one day about an athlete he was working with, and they were out jogging and or something, or doing a run, and the athlete's heart rate was like 165. And the athlete's like, I can't speed up, you know, I'm going to blow. And he's like, if you're talking to me, you're not going to blow at 168. What are you talking about? And so he just called me one day basically ranting about how, like, people just don't understand this technology and performance and training, and it's only getting bigger. And me as a scientist, like, I become also extremely infuriated when people misinterpret science. And they became very dogmatic, because if you understood the true limitations of science, I think people would back off a lot on, you know, what's proven and this is nonsense or bro science or any of that stuff. So I became infuriated at the same time. And I work, you know, on the back end a lot. I've consulted with a decent amount of these new tech companies, and I have a lot of friends that are, you know, former strength coaches, but now they moved over to one of these innovative products. And I started to have a conversation with a lot of NFL strength coaches and other strength coaches about, and I just started asking them, like, oh, do you guys use Catapult, or do you use GPS? What do you guys use? Yeah, okay, great. Then how are you using it? Right. And the answer was always the same, like, wow, like, either we have three sports scientists who are programmers and they sit behind a desk and they tell us, hey, number 25, he's done, like, and he's reached these magical numbers, and I'm like, this is completely probably wrong, and it's certainly not something that the average strength conditioning coach can ever actually implement. Agreed. And you're being swallowed in data. And so he asked me about, he's like, let's do a book about this, and I'm like, dude, I'm not interested in writing a book, like, I do not have the
only
time.
Anybody that writes a book really wants to write a book.
No, it's exactly right. Well, we kept going, and I was like, oh, dude, okay, like, we got to do this. So we launched into it, man. And really, here's what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to write a book about, like, here are the top 10 ways to check your cell phone less. Like, get off Facebook. Like,
right.
Okay, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
All right. And I also didn't want to write a book about just, like, was compliant. I mean, like we talked about earlier, the reason I got into science was because I hate it when people complain about things and don't show up with the solution.
Yep.
So don't complain as a strength coach, well, scientists don't actually study anything that's a matter. If that's a problem, go become a scientist and fix that problem. If not, shut the hell up.
Yep. Like, yep.
Stop complaining about it unless you have a solution. So when I was like, well, let me start thinking about potential ways, because I didn't want to write an anti-technology book. I wanted to write a book that was, here are the downfalls or common mistakes with technology, the limitations. Here's how we can better use them or appropriately use them. And then what are some other guides and tools that can help us become successful? Because if you think you're going to turn a blind eye to technology, good luck.
Right.
It's here. It's going to stay. And if you're a strength coach and you're like, oh, I'm just never going to worry about learning how to use GPS, like, you're going to not get hired. You're going to get passed over. So you need to understand how to integrate these things, but understand to not outsource your coaching to these quote-unquote smart technologies, because they're never going to be as smart as you are.
Right, right. No, I thought that was fantastic. Lots of things to dig in there. You know, I remember I wrote in my book, you know, that you know, if you would have sent me a tweet, you know, way back when, I would have punched you in the face. I mean, I thought social media was the stupidest thing in the world. I thought, you know, I was the guy that left my cell phone in my truck. I mean, I was an anti-tech kind of guy. And you know, I read Tim, you know, you talk, I mean, Tim's in the book, Tim Ferriss is in the book. I read 4-Hour Work Week, kind of changed a lot of things about me for like a lot of people. But I started to learn how to use it judiciously. And that's something that you talk about in this book. It's not going away, you know. And I had that conversation with my wife when we were talking about cell phones for my kids. You know, I remember going through that. My brother was actually murdered by a guy reaching for his cell phone. And swerved over and hit him, you know, and I remember saying, I'm not, like, I'm never going to use my cell phone again. And, But you're right. There's no way of avoiding that with evolution. You know, it's defining the way to use it in the appropriate way, which is obviously not when you're driving a damn car. You know, but
right.
I think in the book, what I really, you know, the two main kind of points that I took away, anyways, were, you know, is not to misuse tech and use it judiciously and get back to nature, you know, and really focus on being outside and embracing, you know, everything that the environment has to provide for you. When we're talking about the dependence on tech, you guys went into a lot of different issues that come about, you know, things that you wouldn't normally think about, you know, but really kind of, you know, just how it's unhealthy psychologically, whether it be, you know, physically, emotionally, or socially, you know, how, you know, the reliability and the validity of the equipment that's being used can be challenged with the algorithms.
Yep.
Understanding your own senses and having, you know, like that. I remember I just went for a run earlier today and I got on my, you know, my second mile and I was like, I'm starting to freaking, my heart rate's getting up and I'm like, I'm wanting to look at my watch to see where my heart rate was. And I remember that passage saying, you know, freaking, I can still go.
Yeah.
And then that, I think just having no fun. And I think, you know, this dependence on tech, talk about, you know, those issues independently and how they're infiltrating, you know, college athletics.
Well, I can tell you, here's the real, one of the underlying things of the book that I actually, this was intentional. I didn't want to put this out there front in your face, but I wanted to make this a bit subliminal, is the book is really about the technologies of today, but the underpinning message is this is a problem for some of us right now.
Right.
But it is a massive and debilitating problem that's going to be here in 10 years or less. So if you don't build infrastructure and daily habits now, you're going to be completely swallowed when everything in your life is 100% roboticized. And if you don't think that that's coming, it's already here. You just don't realize it yet.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's the real issue. So the stuff of getting back to nature and the stuff of paying attention to your own awareness, I mean, I'm not kidding you. Like, I've already been approached by a company that has a watch, like an Apple Watch, that can monitor your hydration. And it literally will send you a beep that says, take a drink of water, Ron.
Jeez.
Like, now this is a real problem for a lot of reasons. And if you want to take this to the coaching realm,
right?
Like, you don't have a profession anymore.
Right.
Why do I need you? This monitor told me that I'm overworked to take a day off. It told me to go a little bit longer. Told me I don't need you anymore. At least that's what they're going to think.
Right.
So in my opinion, for especially in the collegiate strength world, I feel like that is a profession that's not only going to thrive, it's going to skyrocket in its value, potentially, if people do it right. The people that pay attention and develop the right skill sets right now are going to be so valuable in 15 or 20 years that they're going to be millionaires, easy.
Right.
Because everyone else is going to be – you know, all the small colleges, all the other ones going to go like, I don't need a strength coach. We're going to, you know, buy this app for 10 grand. We're done. Like, this is this integrated physiology program. But the ones who can say, okay, I understand how smart and unsmart these technologies are, and I understand context. I mean, we give a bunch of coaching examples in the book. Like, you know, there's a tennis racket that you can buy right now that tells you the velocity of the ball, trajectory, and all these things, right?
Right.
And even if we step back and let's call it artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is only as smart as the question that you have it asked. It doesn't understand context like, well, maybe I wasn't trying to hit the ball as hard as I possibly wanted right then. I was trying to place it, or maybe I was against an opponent, or maybe this is my third game today, or there's a wind change, or whatever else is going on. I doesn't know the score of the game. So a true coach who really spends time understanding human sensation, human emotion, human feeling, they understand their athlete, is going to be able to make decisions that say, hey, look, I know the tech says do A, B, C, or D, but I'm telling you right now, I've been working with you for 4 years. This is what we're going to go do.
Right.
And you can start to challenge it. I mean, the section that we have in there on adapting versus optimizing, I think is a classic example of that. And an artificial intelligence won't ever be able to answer that or ask that question because it won't even know to ask it.
Right.
Right. And so I'll give you maybe like a very specific example of that. So let's say you're doing a block and you've got an 8-week mesocycle. Right. Now you're 4 weeks into that block and your HRV or your physiology monitor tells you you're starting to get a little bit overburned here. Right. And you got 12 soccer girls, and or not, you'd have like 38 soccer girls, but whatever, right? You got 12 tennis girls to make it easier. Right. And 10 of the 12 are getting HRVs in a red. Okay, great. Well, this is something I directly got from Cal Dietz. And he's like, well, yeah, I have to understand what mesocycle am I in.
Right.
If I'm in a mesocycle that's attempting to peak these athletes and I see that they're starting to get burned, then I'm going to use that technology to understand them to pull back.
Right.
But if I'm in my GPP or any other one of my blocks that say, this is when we're trying to induce adaptation, yes, I'm trying to push you. I'm trying to overreach you a little bit.
Right.
I want you to be in red for maybe a day, two, three, maybe a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, depending on whatever we were sort of doing. So an artificial intelligence or an app is never going to understand the context that you understand of what's going on today, this week, this month, this block, this meso, or however you set your periodization strategy up. And so that's the limitation. You understand, like, the technology is simply telling you some very, very arbitrary score based on one physiological measure that has been massively understudied, and I promise you, never examined in athletes.
Right.
So that's really, really hard. You have to understand that as a coach. So if you can learn how to use these things, integrate them, but not outsource your intelligence, then when you actually literally become outsourced to the technology, you can stand up and go, okay, but here's my actual value. So this is what you're not going to get with just implementing this technology.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that really hit home, and something that, I mean, I couldn't say nearly as eloquently as you guys did in the book, but it was how most all this equipment is algorithm-based, based on certain variables that don't take into consideration some of those environmental variables, like wind. You know, if you're running into a 5 mile per hour headwind, then yeah, your heart rate's going to spike a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't see that, you know, after the fact, you know? And,
yeah. Or whether you went on, you know, the concrete was a little bit firmer or softer or, you know, anything. Maybe you're a little bit underslept. You slept an hour less today. That's going to influence heart rate. All those factors go into it. And I can even tell you even worse with the algorithms, because I've been on the backside of these things. Even something, even billion-dollar companies, I'm telling you right now, they have got huge teams of engineers, software engineers that are influencing their algorithms that they use to tell you, okay, I mean, because remember, like, that heart rate monitor doesn't actually measure your heart rate. It measures just a signal, then it converts it to something else, it converts it to something else, and then it's just assumed that actually, it actually tells your heart rate. But I'm telling you, those giant teams change those algorithms all the time.
Yeah.
And they send it out via Wi-Fi, implement your stuff. So if it's constantly changing what it thinks A means to B to C to get you a heart rate, like, that tells you in itself. The reliability tends to be pretty good, but the validity of those things is crazy bad.
Right.
Especially, like, you don't understand context, and you don't understand the individual person. You don't understand what's going on. Especially when you, like, we'll just keep using heart rate, but those things are notoriously bad at high heart rates. Well, the vast majority of the crap you care about as a coach is what's going on between, like, 160 plus beats.
Agreed.
Like, I don't care if they're at 112 or 114, like, whatever.
Right. Right.
But if you're at 180 and you're supposed to be at, you know, 160, then I really care. And that's the part where it's an error. So it's not that you can't use these things for some things. Reliability is still valid or is still important and helpful. But we just can't outsource our coaching expertise. And for the young coaches, I don't know if this is in a book. I don't think so. But the biggest thing that I think is scary for the young coaches is, you know, you and Joe Cannon and all these people that have been around Cal Dietz, you are integrating technology now, but you spent 20 years doing this thing without technology. So you have the skill set to do both.
Right.
You can go back and forth. But these young coaches that are coming up on 100% technology-based, they never actually developed the ability to coach without technology.
Agreed.
This is a real problem.
I've said that so many times when coaches are, you know, because a lot of these, you know, these NFL teams and these professional organizations, they're hiring sports scientists.
Yeah,
my comment to them anytime I'm called about, you know, who should I recommend or this, that, or the other is that it's much easier to teach a seasoned coach technology than it is the other way around.
No way. You can't make that up at all. Like, you're never going to get there. And so the problem is going to be what happens then when that technology comes out to be faulty.
Yeah.
That's like, great. This is your problem. I mean, we have, we'll take a movement screen. All right, now every coach used some sort of movement screen. I guarantee it, right?
Right.
Whether you're using an actual movement screen or you're just saying, well, I watch my athletes when they move.
Right.
Okay, fine. Doesn't care if you use the thing. But there are a bunch of apps now and a bunch of software. I mean, Dartfish, Coach's Eye, and there's some ones that'll even just, like, you film them with your cell phone, and it gives you a score and says, oh, their IT band is tight on the left side. Right? Well, a lot of people are using this. And you're like, right. Are you kidding me? Like,
you're throwing everything out with the bathwater, right?
Right? Like, I don't need to see this. And I've had some friends, and I won't name them, who have worked with some of these companies, and they'll do just, like, a very good technical squat, and they'll just get, like, a 70%, and they've done this, like, tremendous train wreck squat to get 90%.
Yeah.
And these apps are out there, and people are buying them, and people are learning how to coach based on these things instead of learning actual movement and actual coaching skills. And so it's going to become a real, real problem, and you're going to be very limited when, again, it comes out that, oh, that technology is not good anymore, or here's the new one. And like you said at the very beginning, you're playing an arms race, and only a couple of people win that game.
That's right. That's right. I think something that I really liked that was said in the book, and I can't remember – I think you said the number was like 19.6 million has been spent on mobile, you know, tech devices in the last year or whatever. I can't remember exactly what it was, but
oh, it's way higher than that. But I can't remember either.
Yeah, maybe it's billion. I don't know, but it was something ridiculous like that. And yet, you know, we're still unhealthy. We're still not as performance. I can't remember if it was in the book or not, but they talked about putting somebody, you know, a silver medalist in the 100 meter and having and running and Jesse Owens and stuff, mm-hmm. and he came and said, you know, didn't come near his time, you know, and all this progress, all this technology, and we still haven't made the strides, you know, and so at parts of the book, I felt as a coach, I felt a little discouraged because it's like, all right, are we really making an impact? You know, are we really doing that? And that's why, I mean, oftentimes when people ask me, I don't identify myself just as a strength coach, but I'm also kind of a life coach, you know, and having them interpret, you know, outside stresses and lead to performance. That's oftentimes what I do. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to the coach that read this, that's feeling discouraged by, like, okay, well, shoot, I can't understand the damn tech. I'm never going to understand that. It's going to change anyways.
Yep.
You know, we're not really getting athletes that much better with all the freaking fancy equipment that we have in the weight room. So what the hell is my job about?
Yeah. So what I would say there is, the counter would be this, anytime you see a real problem, that is also an opportunity on the other side. So here you have the ability to do something very, very different and to develop a skill set that everyone else is not paying attention to anymore.
Right.
And then when that stuff crumbles, you become the signing star there and the knight that goes, oh, yeah, I don't need 360 degrees of cameras all around my room to coach.
Right.
Hey, I can take all these kids through it. I can figure out their movement problems. I can do this. I can get them off faster. Yeah, I don't need this stuff. Give me a stopwatch, and I'll take these 100 kids through, and I'll make them better by the end of the year. They'll all get faster, guaranteed.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, your intuition is really what you're developing, right?
Right, right.
And that's what we're getting after, is trying to develop a combination of intuition as well as personal sensation. And then when we can start using the tech to help us become calibrated, now we're actually moving forward. In addition, think about it this way. You know, you and I are both interviewing for a job, and we're going to, you know, since I'm from Seattle, we'll pick the Seahawks.
Right.
Even though you're a Midwest guy, that's okay. I'll forgive you.
Sorry, we beat the Seahawks every time we played them.
1980s? That's fine. Okay. So we're both trying to get a job, you know, and we're going up in front of Schneider and, you know, the guys, and we say, okay, look, here's my program. Here's my strength conditioning program. You know, I want a 250K a year as a salary, and I need 50 grand in equipment. And then you go, yeah, I want 250K in salary, and I need $2 million in equipment, plus I need 3 sports scientists, and I need this. Well, if I can get the same outcome.
Right.
And I can show the data. In fact, we'll look at his last couple of years. He was coaching at the Bengals, and look what happened to them, and look where I was. Like, and we have analytical data that suggests your players are not getting any faster than mine. I've now gave myself extreme value because, like, yeah, this stuff is a waste, and they're just trying to cloud you. They're trying to put up a facade of expertise because they're putting in high-tech stuff, but it's really not making much of a difference.
Well, I would agree with you 100% on that. I think the challenge I think the reason why tech has been embraced so much is because there are some now, you know, there's a way for them to quantify some success. And if it doesn't give you the data that I want it to do, I just don't present that data. Yeah, versus, yeah. Well, that's what, you know, it's, used that argument the other way with coaches where it's like, you know, half the time coaches coming up to me after practice and saying, well, what do you think we need to condition today? And I'm, you know, I'm watched a 2.5 hour practice and, you know, I'm like, I don't know, you know. But it's nice to be able to say, you know, give some sort of a number of where we're at versus, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that's true. But, you know, like I won't say his name. Just I don't know if he's okay with me saying it or not. But sure. And I was talking to one NFL strength coach about a year ago. And I specifically asked him, you guys using him all this stuff. And I said, how often are you sitting on the sidelines going, yep, number 22 needs to come off the field right now. And then how often? And he's like, oh, every time. Like every time. Yeah. He's like, I can pick out who's going to be like theirs. And I'm like, okay, well, then there you go. Like,
right.
That's not to say TPS is useless. I think you should have it, and there should be some stuff there because it can help us gain a lot of benefit. I mean, this is the point of the book, but we need to develop the skill set outside of that. So,
great.
You know, the difficulty of things like, let's take our offensive linemen versus our wide receivers. Like, well, how effective is the GPS for a wide receiver? Probably pretty good. Right, we're for an offensive lineman. Oh, it looks like your GPS says you moved 25 yards in practice today.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, well.
That's a little bit difficult, 25 yards. I think you said it great there where, you know, technology, you know, is used as a calibration or a diagnostic tool as opposed to driving what you're doing or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I guess the question that I think everybody that's watching probably is asking is like, okay, now I've got freaking 15 different devices.
Yeah,
you know, which ones of these should I use for calibration? Which ones should I do? How do I keep constant data and then just look at trends over time?
So that's
what would you recommend a strength coach at a college actually monitor?
Yeah, exactly. And the answer to that is the way you just described it is exactly what we call bad science. Mm-hmm. Right. That only leads to it's the analogy of throwing a can of paint on the wall and seeing what sticks. But that's not how science should work. That's going to get you looking at a bunch of things on the wall that you don't know if they make sense at all.
Right.
So what I would say is you need to ask yourself, what's your problem? And then get a technology that can potentially address the problem.
Right.
Are your guys or girls getting banged up too much? Are you concerned that they're overtraining because the coaches are having them do too much and they're not telling you that? So when you show up the weight room, are you just too slow? Like, what is your actual issue? And then you purchase technology that you think can help you address that issue. Don't just purchase every technology that you can get because the administration says, hey, we got $1,000 and you got to spend it before the cycle's up, the fiscal year's over, you're going to lose it.
Which is exactly how it's being done.
Well, I know how that goes. Right? But, I mean, you can, but, like, well, in that case, put it in the thing, but.
Right.
And don't just collect, like, I think you brought this up earlier, but Tim Ferriss heard about our project and was like, you know, I got to be on board here. So he wrote a section at the end for us. And he brought this up, which is like, do not collect data for the sake of data collection.
Yep.
Like, it's not going to be helpful. In fact, it's generally going to be harmful for a number of technical reasons as well as psychological and other reasons. So if you have a specific question, address it. Find a tech. So whether this is HRV or GPS or heart rate monitors or whether Dartfish or Coach's Eye or whatever, you're going to get blood work done. But that comes from you sitting down with you and your staff and the coaches and the players in your post-season meetings and your checkouts and going, all right, what do we think our real issues were? Let's look at this on the board. And it's what I call defenders, right? So identify the defender. And if your coaches say, okay, like the girls were just too slow this year. Well, it's your job as a strength coach to identify what's defending them from being fast because it might not just be they're slow. Right. It might be something else. What is it? Well, maybe if they're slow. Okay, why are they slow? Well, they're slow because they never get enough speed workouts. Why don't they get enough speed workouts? Well, because they're too tired. Okay, so the actual defenders, they're unfit. Oh, okay, great. Or
right.
Every time we do agility work, their knees start getting banged up. Well, maybe because they're a little bit overweight. Well, if that's the actual defender, okay, now let's see if we can then buy an app that's maybe a calorie tracker or something like that to help them get, like, that's what you're really trying to do is defend or identify what's really defending you from achieving your goal and then maybe implement some software to get around that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. We talked a little bit about, you know, getting back to, you know, to being outside and embracing the environment. And that's something that I've done as a coach my whole career, you know, constantly I'll my interns hate me because I'll move the weight room outside for the day just to train outside, or you know, we'll go and you know, I'd take the guys out and climb Pikes Peak, you know, the senior class have to climb Pikes Peak or go whitewater rafting and things. And, you know, oftentimes I get a little bit, you know, I get, you know, a lot of people think that's cool and it's been more embraced through the years. But when I was doing that early on in my career, it's like you're giving up a training day. Why would you give up a training day? You know,
come on. Yeah.
What are the benefits and what are some suggestions that you have maybe for, you know, in that rigid, high, you know, really, you know, high demanding, hyper-focused, you know, elite level team, how can they embrace getting outdoors? And what are some of the things that you would recommend for them to get those benefits?
Yeah, so this is, again, this is one of those sneaky parts of the book where I fully agree with you, but that was really put in there to warn people against the future.
Yeah.
Because it's not that bad right now, although I would argue it's bad, but it's going to be unimaginably bad in 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
I just yelled at my kids an hour before we got on that they need to get their butts outside.
Right? I mean, exactly. It's only going to be worse. Right. Everything is going to be roboticized. There will be no more physical activity outside for the most part. And so this is really what it's about, is doing what you did, which is making it normal now.
Right.
So that in 10 years, you know, your administration just doesn't think twice when you want to take the team out and go jump in the lake or something.
Right.
But we have, I mean, we could take this from a physiological perspective. You have sensors in your eyeballs that only work when hit with direct sunlight. All right. So we're not going to get those from LED lights. We're not going to get those from any other light. And you don't get those, by the way, when you go outside and every millisecond that you're outside, you throw sunglasses on.
Yep.
Right. And like, I get so annoyed at people. They wear sunglasses and they walk 25 feet and then they put their sunglasses on and then they go through the shade and then they take them off and they put them back on.
Yeah. Right.
Like, just leave the things off, because you have physiology that is designed and engineered or evolved or however you want to look at it, that is 100% there to handle exposure to elements. When you remove that exposure, those enzymes, those proteins, those genes go dormant, right? They are in charge of a whole host and cascade of elements like DNA replication, cleaning misfolded up proteins, removing damaged tissues and cells, recovery, anti-cancer, I mean, you name it, oxidative stress, all these things there. And so if that whole element's not being addressed, you really have concerns with either your long-term health or your performance recovery, however you want to look at it.
Right.
But these are only things we get from being, in some cases, exposed to elements. I mean, the very, very easy one people are aware of is vitamin D. I mean, I think it's pretty silly that we're all guzzling down 10,000 IUs of vitamin D supplements.
Right.
Right. And the reason we need that is because we have a ton of cholesterol floating in our body, and we use the sunlight to convert that to vitamin D. And when we don't have the sunlight, the cholesterol doesn't get converted to vitamin D. Therefore, we have to take vitamin D exogenously. And vitamin D is critical for bone formation. It is a direct activator of protein synthesis.
Yep.
Most people don't realize that. You're like, a vitamin is one of the most important signals to grow muscle. Like, absolutely.
Yep.
And so we have a little bit of exposure. And then, you know, the last part of the book, because the subtitle is, you know, it's Unplugged, Evolve from Technology to Upgrade Your Fitness Performance, which is what we've been talking about. But the last part of it is consciousness.
Right.
And this is the stuff that's, it's not really my expertise. It's Brian and Phil are really in these areas. But I agree with it fully, of course, which is, I mean, the example of, do you remember the section about humans being able to see the color blue?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So like, I'm not going to tell you the answer here in the podcast. You're going to have to check out in the book. But basically, we've only been able to see the color blue for a few thousand years now.
Right.
So what other sensations and senses are we either lost or we haven't developed because we're not exposing ourselves to anything, any of these elements? And then that doesn't even count all of the team building and all the other aspects, the conscious aspects that you can get from being out in a little bit of nature exposure. So
right.
That I think it's just a really, really important thing we have to pay attention to moving forward.
I could agree with you more. And I think, I mean, you talk about, you know, physiology as well. And I get on a soapbox all the time about functional fitness and what functional fitness is. And most people will give you, you know, the squat, the pull, the push, the hinge, you know, the drag, carry, whatever. But really, I mean, it's a component. I mean, those are components of functional fitness, but it's also really the missing ingredient, in my opinion, is the primal movements. You know, the jumping, the landing, ditching, climbing and surmounting, and those are things that, you know, we have as kids, but we lose as adults, and which often lead to those injuries, you know. And
yeah, the beauty of the weight room is the fact that movements can be quantified, they can be systematized, they can be broken down, even complex movements in the weight room, squats, deadlifts, hinges, snatches. That's still not very complex because I get to set up, I get to neutralize my spine, I get to pull in my belly, I get to retract my shoulders, I get to be symmetrical on the bar, right?
Right.
Well, by definition, by doing all this stuff, we have eliminated unexpected exposure.
Right.
But when I play for the vast majority of my sports, unless I'm a weightlifter, I'm in those into those same elements again. So I need to be able to produce power. I need to be able to produce mobility. I need to be able to produce those in a good neutral spine or safe position or whatever we need to be when my feet are not set up naturally and normally. And when I don't predict these movements. Like my friend Kelly Starrett, who also joined in a book. He always says, like, if you don't have direct access to this hygiene, like, you don't own that movement.
Right.
Like, you should be able to get there immediately and at all times and unexpectedly, or you don't really understand that position, or you don't really own that movement base. So doing a little bit of stuff in nature where the footing isn't specific and it isn't direct, and all that allows us, and I don't think either one of us are saying that this is, hey, just move all your training, just do hill sprints and go outside. And, we're just saying make this, you know, once a month or or whatever it is that's feasible for you in your setting and get out there a little bit to expose them. Like, you and I both know, like, Louis Simmons showed this, like, clearly, that small variations in training, and his choice was to vary the exercise choice, right? So box squat today, different type of squat tomorrow, allows you to remain training at a very, very high intensity very frequently, and you don't get broken down if you insert a tiny bit of variation.
Right.
So the same thing here, it's like we get them outside, introduce a little bit of variation. You continue to have a very high quality or a high intensity training program, avoid overtraining, avoid injuries by just introducing that little bit of variability into the program.
Yeah, I think you guys go into that even further with talking about, you know, if you constantly train in the cold, train in the heat one day, or you vice versa, or, you know, go out for a run in the rain, or you know, it doesn't have to, it could be environmental as well. And
Yeah, I mean, I live in the worst thing ever for me, which is, like, you know, basically Los Angeles. And I'm a country guy, and I said my whole life I would never, ever, ever live in I live anywhere besides LA or New York, and sure as hell I ended up down here.
That's the way it always happens.
Yeah, I'm soon though. Soon. I'm there you getting go. Out. But my point of saying that is, like, so I have had to find a way to do that while being stuck in LA the last 6 years. So if I can make it happen, you know, if you're in Davenport, like, you can make this thing happen. Like, you all are in a lot better place than me to get there. So it's just about making choices. And like you said, it's appreciating the environment I have around me and getting out and getting the headphones out occasionally and doing as much as I can out there and understanding the exposure. I think it's also really important. One of the other mistakes that I made younger in my career was being too worried about specifying.
Right.
And not increasing my exposure to as many things as I can. So in the back of the book, the very last little bit is sort of like a training program, if you will, for all of these different stressors you can put on your body. So whether these are hunger stressors, thirst stressors, heats, colds, different types of training. I mean, I remember going probably 4, 5, 6 years maybe without ever doing anything of more than maybe 20 straight minutes.
Right.
It's like I played college football and then weightlifting and then MMA, and you're like, I'm not doing anything 30 straight minutes.
That's right.
And then I remember being like, I'm 27 years old and I can't jog for 30 minutes.
Right.
And if I do, my knee's going to get banged up. My back's going to hurt like hell tomorrow. Like, I'm a physiological liability. Like, that's a real problem. That's a limitation. I think every human should have, well, most of us anyway, should have that ability. So.
Agreed.
It's just giving ourselves, well, I was just weight. I thought I was well-rounded because I could snatch and I could press and I could pull and I could do intervals and my heart rate could go up really great. But that other end of the spectrum, man, I couldn't touch.
Yeah, that's. I think so many times as coaches, that's, you know, those are the limiting factors when we get down to, you know, all of a sudden if you're trained just ATP PC system and you get into a 6-hour game, well then you
have to the service,
you know, go a couple overtimes, you know, but
yeah.
Well, man, this has been fantastic, and I could ask you a million more questions and probably will offline, but. To end the show, we always end with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I would say that the answer is always yes. And what I mean by that is when you're a young coach, if you get an opportunity, the answer is yes. And, you know, like I got derailed a little bit, because I actually read the 4-Hour Work Week as well. And it derailed me a little bit because he talks about being efficient, making smart choices with projects you're going to do and not going to do. But I had to step back and realize, like, he was writing that for somebody who's already achieved a very high level of success.
Right. I agree with that.
And so I actually totally disagree. My approach when I was younger, and still is to this day, like, the answer is yes. So I worked, when I was my senior year of college, I got a job working at Adidas, which was like an hour and a half away from where I was. And basically, it's corporate wellness.
Right.
And I have zero interest ever in corporate wellness.
Right. Yeah, you mean.
I had zero interest in driving an hour and a half each way. And I was like, yeah, I'll take it. And they're like, well, we need somebody for the 5 a.m. shift. I'll take it. Right. So I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning driving up there. I got there 30 minutes easily, if not 45 minutes early, every single day just in case traffic happened. Right.
Right.
Well, it turns out, guess who starts walking through the doors eventually? Like, my first clients are the, like, 6 members of the executive board. Are in there working out every day. And I don't have a clue who they are.
Right.
I'm not paid to personal train. I'm just supposed to check them in, but no one else is there. So I'm down there. I basically start coaching them every day for months on end, walking through sessions. I have no idea. And you know what this eventually leads to, right?
Sure.
So you wonder how you get opportunities. You get opportunities because the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
And not only is it yes, but you will do it, and you will do it to a 10 out of 5. Like, you'll do it. And if it's the crappiest, unimportant job, in fact, I'll do this quickly. I know we're short on time, but the reason I got that damn Adidas job was because my faculty member at my small school said, hey, I want to set up a booth outside for a wellness project so anyone walking by can get their blood pressure checked and so they can start to understand if they're healthy. And she's like, does anybody want to do that? And I was like, sure, I'll do it. And I have no interest in corporate wellness. I have no interest in blood pressure. And she's like, great, do you know how to measure blood pressure? And I'm like, nope, no idea.
Learning.
Like, great.
Yep.
So she taught me. I sat out there. Now, this is Oregon, by the way. So I sat outside, and it was rainy and cold for 3 hours or something on a Saturday or whatever it was. Not a single person came by. Like, nothing happened. And months go by. I'm like, well, that was a waste of 5 hours or whatever. She gets an email, of course. Hey, we need somebody who could fill this job. Do you know anybody who could do this role? And, of course, she reaches out to me because she's like, I don't know if he knows anything about this or cares, but I know that this is what's going to happen. He's going to work his butt off. He's going to be there early, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's, I think, the best coaching advice that I ever received. And that was generally from my father and my grandfather.
Yeah.
Which is like, this is just, they were both road construction workers. And I worked for them. My brother worked for them. And, you know, in that world, if the shovel goes in the ground at 6 a.m. and if it's 5:15 and you're not on the job site, you're fired.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how it works. And the shovel goes in at 6 a.m., it stops at noon, it goes back in the ground at 12:30, and it comes out of the ground at 6:30. And, like, this is how your day runs, and there's just no excuses. So that was what it was.
Yeah, yeah. That's fantastic.
Always say yes.
I always say similar, you know, make the big time where you're at, you know, and
yeah.
Focus on that, but that's awesome. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
So I'll go a little bit different here because I was thinking about this in your email. I'm sure a lot of your guests get really good coaching books and stuff, but I don't think I have it up here. I just took it in my office. But my good friend Chris Moore wrote a book called Barbell Buddha, and it's the complete writings of Chris Moore. And Chris was a very, very close friend of mine. He got his master's at Memphis as well.
Yep.
Played college football at Memphis and was a 1,000-pound squatter, 7 bench set dead, 7 dead, all natural guy. So he was very talented. I think he won a national championship in powerlifting at one point. And he's a scientist. He published, did research, presented at NSCA, all this stuff. And as he got later in his life, he actually sort of transitioned a little bit and started really focusing on philosophy and mental approach. And so he started writing these books, and one of them was called Get Change. Another one was called Way Past Strong. And another one was called Progress. And so they're really these interesting sort of memoirs that weave, you know, powerlifting and lessons from strength and conditioning to lessons from David Bowie or Henry Rollins to Buddha or Badao. And they're just, they're really easy to read. And I think extremely impactful for people that it's still, you know, strength-ish based. It's not just completely outside of our stuff, but it's really not a strength and conditioning or training book. And it's very refreshing. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, he passed unexpectedly about a year and a half or so ago. At 35 years old, just so it's been great. So his wife is getting the books and getting those things out there. So it's fantastic. I read it all the time, and every time I've recommended it to somebody, and they've come back and they're like, "This is just like phenomenal. I've never read anything like this." So
I'm gonna have to pick that one up.
He's a super creative, just an unbelievable storyteller, and a massive, just a really fun writer. He just has a really special style for writing, far more eloquent and enjoyable than jocks like you and I write.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm gonna pick that one up right after we get off. Sounds
fun. Yeah, it's really good.
Well, man, this has been great. And like I said at the beginning, I try to keep these to 20 minutes, but there's no way of possibly doing that with this one. And
I talk too much, man.
No, it's absolutely. And I'm probably gonna talk a year off another 30 after this, but we are lucky to have guys like you in our profession to not only be the practitioner with your sleeves rolled up, putting the shovel in the ground, but also, taking it and really pushing the envelope when it comes to the science and making it applicable. And we talked off camera about how, as coaches, we need to do a better job of continuing to build this profession and asking those questions. And if you don't have time to do the research, like a lot of coaches don't, partner with somebody that's like yourself that is doing research as part of their living, create some great strategic partnerships. But
you're crazy if you think that that's not a two-way street too. I get asked this question a lot from coaches. It's like, how do we actually bridge that gap? And I think that for me, the quick tip is from the coach's perspective to the researcher. Like I love it when I get asked questions and they say like, hey, how would I integrate this? Or can you help me translate this? Like, what does this mean for my athletes? So I wouldn't hesitate, as long as you do it from a position that it's a genuine question and not like a, you're such an idiot, you don't understand training, like how would you ever implement this?
Right.
That's not helpful. And then from the scientist perspective too, back to the practitioner, like some of these practitioners are pretty damn smart.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if you had a chance, you probably didn't, to check out my website, but the whole goal of that website is to take all of this, class textbook information, put it up there and give it away for free. And the reason I do all these podcasts and the reason I run my social media the way I do is because to me, if I'm doing science and I can't not only deliver it to the coaches, but deliver it to them in a fashion that's on their level, then what's the point of my life?
Right.
What impact am I really making? It's actually my job to take the leadership to say, well, hey coach, if you can't read it, like that's not my job. Well, I feel like it is.
Right.
Like I'm doing my best to translate it to you on your level, just because you know what? That's what coaches do for me. I couldn't sit there and listen to everything that a full-time strength coach says. Like I'd get lost.
Right.
But most strength coaches talk to their audiences to the audience's level, but scientists won't go back the other way and do that.
Right. Right.
So I think that's what we need to do to keep moving forward.
Well, I think I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you're an example of somebody that takes extreme ownership and says, if there's not an answer, I'm going to go find the answer. And I think we need more of those types of people in the world. And take, that's the definition of genius, right? Is taking the complex and making it simple,
You're right. Can't explain it simply, don't understand it or not.
That's exactly right, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody, man.
My pleasure.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.